Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, ahead of International Women's Day on Wednesday, the 8th of March, we're looking at the extraordinary career of Eleanor Ostrom, who remains the only female to be awarded the Nobel Prize for Economic Sciences. Over several years, UBS is publishing a film series called Nobel Perspectives, documenting the life and work of Nobel laureates in economics like Eleanor and many more. Since the prize in this discipline was introduced in the late 1960s, it's been awarded to 75 men and to Ostrom. We'll explore the reasons for this, and with the help of contributions from some present-day economists, we'll discuss how to build on Ostrom's legacy and continue to ensure a more representative economics. In today's programme, we'll also hear from the late, great economist herself on the challenges she faced and the obstacles that she overcame. We start with Vicky Price, Chief Economic Advisor at the Centre for Economics and Business Research, and who's previously served as Director General for Economics at the UK's Department for Business, Innovation and Skills, and as Joint Head of the UK Government Economic Service. Why does Vicky believe that Ostrom's still the only woman to have won the Nobel Prize in Economics?
It's very sad because, of course, I mean, economics is such an exciting science, if you like. Some people call it science anyway, to study, which gives you all sorts of opportunities to experiment in all sorts of different areas. So it's not just maths, it's social policy that comes into it, you have to understand psychology of people. So it should, in theory, be quite an attractive place for women to be involved in and therefore also gain acceptability, if you like, and also thrive and succeed. And we don't see this, and the reason why we don't see it, in my view, is because it's sold as it being a very mathematical subject, and it's true that in many universities that's what it is. Quantitative economics is really the name of the game, and it doesn't really make sense because a lot of what you need to be a good economist is not maths. In many ways, it's a waste of time to just focus on that. So women get put off, basically. I think that's what happens.
Vicky was talking there about how mathematical quantitative economics is, and this is something that Paul Donovan, UBS global economist, also picks up on.
There are a mix of issues around why women have not taken their proper place amongst the ranks of economists. This is not to deny that we haven't had some brilliant female economists, not only Ostrom, I mean, think of Joan Robinson and so on, but part of the problem, I think, is that in the 1960s and the 1970s, economics started to become very, very mathematical. And mathematics also, at that time, had a problem with very few female mathematicians coming through. Indeed, the mathematical rigidities was something that Ostrom herself criticized in a lot of her work. Now, the problem with this, I think, is that as the profession veered towards the mathematical, away from the empirical political economics, women were perhaps less comfortable studying that and therefore chose to study other areas of the social sciences rather than focusing on economics. As the pendulum has swung away from excessive mathematical modelling and as mathematics itself has started to get more women entering into that sphere, hopefully we will start to see an improvement in the number of female professors and doctors coming through.
Now, Vicky Price herself is involved in a women's economists group to help mentor and provide networking opportunities. How and why did she get involved in this project?
It's a very interesting development. Of course, I've been always a great believer in any sort of networking opportunities that there are for women, because after all, men do it very well and women generally don't. But of course, we did realise, particularly when I was working in the private sector, that there weren't very many women economists as such. And we'd go to all sorts of conferences and we'd be maybe 2 or 3 out of 100. And that has changed a bit, but not very much. And then I went to the public sector and realized actually there were many more women economists and many more coming up, and many of them actually foreign, where there isn't quite the same concern about the types of things you learn at school and university as there is here. But what we did find is that if public sector and private sector got together, and we actually also encouraged lots of other people to come into the profession, and but also help them with their own progression, because you may get stuck. As an economist, you think that that's all I'm going to be doing lots of research in dark rooms with a computer in front of me, and then passing it on to someone else, you can then turn it into policy. That's not really what economists should be doing in the long term. They should be very involved in influencing. So economists have a huge role in making sure the money is spent appropriately, that there is no waste, that we look at whether, you know, whatever we do actually has a value at the end of the day, and basically scrutinizing government policies and making sure we do the right thing for the economy. And so it's influencing that is important. That's really what we wanted to encourage people to think. They can do this in the private sector, they can do it in the public sector, they can do it in the mix of the things that they are involved in. And lots of women just found it, from what we saw, a very limiting career. And we want to encourage them to think wider than that.
So is there a lack of positive female role models within economics? The problem is rather that there are simply too few. Paul Donovan explains.
There have been, obviously, some very important role models, and you know, arguably one of the most powerful economists in the world, of course, is Fed Chair Yellen, who has had a long and distinguished career as an academic and as a central banker. So it's not that there aren't any female role models. I think the problem is that the balance is that there are too few female role models in the world of economics still, and that's something that we need to improve. I think it's particularly important in a world where diversity of opinion is increasingly important to understanding what's going on, where empiricism is increasingly important to understanding what's going on. It's worthwhile pointing out the majority of economic decisions in the global economy are made by women.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the issue of the underrepresentation of women in economics, and we'll dig a little deeper into why this is and what can be done about it. Given that women remain rather underrepresented throughout economics, could this go back to education and the processes there? We asked Tao Wong, co-head of Asia Economic Research at UBS Investment Bank, for her insights.
I think in developed societies, certainly we have seen major progress, and you know, women have much better access and there's much less discrimination. We actually do see very prominent women in economics and finance positions to, you know, you can see, for example, Dr. Yellen. But I think in some emerging markets and developing countries, that's not necessarily the case.
So women are maybe put off the discipline much earlier in their academic careers. We asked Vicky Price, too, why and how this detachment can happen.
There's nothing wrong with getting more to do maths and to take away any sort of mystique about STEM subjects, in other words, the science and math subjects that people can do at school. So the more women you encourage to do that, the better it is. And there is a very interesting statistic which says that your income through your life is correlated most with having done, in the UK anyway, A-level maths. So if women could understand that, that actually qualifies them to do loads of things and not perhaps just whatever they imagine, which is sort of fiddling around with aeroplanes or being an engineer, but actually is much wider than that, then that would help. So there's a lot to do with schools. But the second thing, I think, is indeed the institutional establishments we have, the educational establishments such as universities, which haven't quite realized that heavy sort of econometricians are not really what society necessarily wants. There may be a need for some of them, but certainly not in the numbers that are coming out. And when I was joint head of the Government Economic Service here in the UK, we were going around various universities which were doing particularly master's courses and saying, actually, you're producing all these quantitative people, but we have no real use for them. What we want is people who are savvy, who've understood enough about how the world works and who can really help with policy development, do the cost-benefit that is required, do evaluations of policies. Your quantitative econometric modelers don't really do that for us. And how can we actually change that to have the type really employable as a result?
And let's hear next a little from the late Eleanor Ostrom herself and from Louis Vescler, Emeritus Professor at Arizona State University. Here's Eleanor first, talking about the nature of the challenges she faced as a female student of economics.
I was not admitted to a PhD program. I was admitted to a master's. But then when I decided I liked it and I would like to do a PhD, that was an entirely different picture.
When she completed her master's degree, they did not advance her.
Economics just said no. And part of the reason for that was because I had not had any math in college. And part of the reason for that was that in my high school, I didn't let girls take trigonometry unless they got an A in algebra and geometry. And so I never had the kinds of math courses that economics students had, but I learned my mathematics because I graded exams in economics a lot.
Having never taken calculus before, she more or less taught herself calculus and reapplied to the political science department. And by the spring semester, she was admitted to the doctoral program. And as they say, the rest is history.
And As we were hearing before from the woman herself, someone like Ostrom challenged conventional wisdom. Does that make her achievements even more impressive given the small-c conservatism and male bias of the sector? Here's Paul Donovan again.
I think Ostrom chose a sphere where the established way of thinking about things was so patently wrong that she was able to capitalize on the environmental economic issues and the poor quality research that was being done about that. So what she did, I think very intelligently, was find an area where being able to challenge was sort of like pushing at an open door. Because as soon as she started pointing out a lot of the flaws with Samuelson's approach to public goods and private goods and how this didn't really apply in the environmental sphere, it became obvious. Now, she was the pioneer in many ways in explaining this, but I think actually she probably found a niche which made it relatively easy for her to challenge the prevailing wisdom, because the prevailing wisdom was just frankly wrong.
And what does Vicky Price think?
Of course, there have been a number of quite well-known women economists like John Robinson, for example, who was a sort of a disciple of Keynes. So, and there have been loads of women doing a lot of very good innovative work, but who don't, in fact, get acknowledged for having done it. So there is still the perennial problem of, do women push themselves forward? Do they take the credit when it's due to them? Or do they get possibly some of what they do sort of pinched by others who then are able to claim it as their own, or at least get the recognition that perhaps they would do? So I think there is quite a lot going on in the background, and women haven't quite sort of grasped the opportunity to use what they've learned and push it. So yes, I mean, the fact that she made it is really good news, but it is really sad that we haven't done any better than that.
We also asked Tao Wong about Ostrom's achievements, given the sector's male bias.
It is very extraordinary. She got a Nobel Prize for economics, but she actually did not get an economics PhD because she was not admitted to the program. And that goes back to her high school education, where as a girl she was dissuaded of studying certain math. But she fought on and taught herself enough math and also went through field studies and workshops and experiments and so on. So she really is a pioneer.
Next up, we're going to look back to 2009 and Ostrom's Nobel recognition. How would Tao Wong sum up Ostrom's contribution to economics in the light of that award?
Well, Eleanor Ostrom's contribution is that she studied how human societies can actually cooperate, can have successful ways to manage so-called common pool resources, such as pastures, water resources, fish stocks, and so on. And her contribution is that, contrary to traditional wisdom, that either, you know, the resource needs to be privatized or controlled by the government, she found that there were thousands of cases of success where human societies have managed it among themselves successfully. And of course, she then summarized into her so-called design principles to find what are the key to the success of managing those common pool resources. So it's quite interesting.
And let's hear from Eleanor Ostrom again. Here she's discussing the Nobel Prize winning work she did together with Oliver Williamson on economic governance, especially the commons.
People had presumed that people could not self-organize. So Garrett Hardin's Tragedy of the Commons predicted that they just couldn't do it. And so you had to either privatize it or you turn it over to the government. We had collected a very large number of case studies and thought, could I get the specific rules? And I couldn't. Finally, I realized I was trying to get too specific, and that what was important was to look at a broader level of findings, which I called design principles. And so finally, after this huge struggle, I was able to write Governing the Commons. Phew. It was a big struggle.
Finally, on today's programme, what are the key issues to address in terms of ensuring that a more representative legacy for Ostrom's work is built throughout economics? How do we challenge the problem of underrepresentation? Via education? Should it be state-led? Paul Donovan himself visits schools to sell the message, and we asked him to tell us about this process.
Yes, we probably do need to be looking at school levels. We want to get people interested in economics as early as possible. And yes, I think that this is about getting women or girls involved in economics, making them understand that actually everybody makes economic decisions all of the time. We should all have an opinion on economics. But I think also there is work needed at probably the postgraduate level at university, that once we have women as undergraduates studying economics at university, you know, how easy is it for them to continue their careers? Is there institutional prejudice that they have to fight? I think many academic institutions are very conscious of the need to improve female participation in the social sciences, particularly in economics, but that's something we need to keep working away at. From my perspective, I think an economist in my position, despite being white, Anglo-Saxon and male, I can try and help encourage people at a school level to at least start thinking about economics. And if we can at least get that in, if we can get people at 16, 17 starting to look at the world in an economic way, that I think is an important first step to getting a properly representative sample of economists in the profession.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 74th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. You can see the UBS Nobel Perspectives film about Eleanor Ostrom from the 8th of March. And catch the others to date. Head to ubs.com and check out the Nobel Perspectives page. Next time, here on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll be mulling the ins and outs, for want of a better expression, of a possible UK exit from the European Union. Be sure to join us for that. In the meantime, listen again and find out more at monocle.com or via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.